I'm here with filmmaker David France, whose documentary How to Survive a Plague was released in theaters last year. The documentary follows two AIDS activist groups, ACT UP and TAG, that were essential in reducing the AIDS epidemic in the U.S. to a manageable condition. David France is both a New York Times bestselling author and an award-winning journalist, and he's also an alum of Kalamazoo College. Thanks for being here, David.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I know you gathered a lot of tape from people who were at the ACT UP and TAG protests in the 80s and 90s. How many years did it really take to put this all together?
Well, for me, it was a three-year process of identifying individuals who may have been shooting videotape in the 80s, mid-80s and to the mid-90s, and then tracking them down to see if they had saved those tapes, and if so, you know, asking them if they would entrust me to combine them with the work of others into a kind of an epic story. Although it took them years and years to shoot the footage, and it covers really this decade of grassroots activism around HIV at a time when the government was paying no attention and the media was paying no attention. So it's really a look behind the curtain, in a way, at what was happening then in the AIDS community.
Yeah, it's a huge piece of history. And why did you decide to release this last year? Why not 10 years ago, you know, earlier than that?
Well, part of it has to do with, you know, when the idea strikes, and for me that struck about 3.5 years ago. But I think maybe the more fundamental answer is that I think historically, if you look at really dark periods in world history, it takes 10 or 15 years, you know, past the resolution of that chapter for historians to begin to look back and try to make sense of it. And so this, I guess the kernel of my interest came at about the 15-year mark, and maybe that's just kind of predictable human behavior, that it takes that interval of time in order to kind of create the curiosity to want to go back and find and situate that history in kind of the larger narrative of kind of human history.
I saw the documentary several weeks ago, and I think that still the most fascinating part for me was how many barriers these activists face in trying to find a cure, not just from politics, but also with doctors and medical staff.
And science itself. I mean, you know, one of the things that we forget is when AIDS first struck in 1981, gay people were entirely excluded from civic life. There were no gay people in the public eye in any way that anyone knew anything about. And you know, that was emblematic of the, you know, just the kind of hideous oppression of gay people, kind of culturally and politically. And then this virus strikes the gay community. And what you saw was, on a political front, and on a kind of a American consciousness, you saw a kind of curiosity about how this epidemic was revealing this community that people didn't really know anything about. And then you saw a political and religious backlash that was indefensible. We all now know historically, but it allowed, well, what we saw was government officials and even health officials nearly cheering on the epidemic, seeing it really as kind of the moral consequences of behavior of a community that they found reprehensible. And in taking that position, rather than taking a public health position, it allowed what was in the first reports a disease affecting 41 people to grow from that into a disease that now has impacted and infected 80 million people. You know, it was one of the largest pandemics in human history, given fanned really in a way by this backward religious and political hatred. And so there was that to begin with, but also there was something else, and that's that virology was in a very young a period in its development. Immunology was nearly a new field. You know, we knew very little about the immune system and how it reacted, and what repressed it, and what arrested it, and how to approach any of that. Retroviruses, which, and that's the family of viruses that HIV falls into, had only recently been discovered, so very little was known about them. It wasn't even known how they caused disease. So science was in its infancy in this area, and without the urgency of government and without the urgency of kind of public health officials, science really loped along for the first few years, the first 15 years of the epidemic. That's why you see the development of AIDS activism. Patients infected with HIV who took it upon themselves to learn the science of AIDS, to develop novel ideas about how to pursue the science of AIDS, and in fact, to tackle the lethargy in the system that was keeping scientists from and public health officials from responding as though this were an emergency. That's the story of How to Survive a Plague, and we see it in this old footage in a really fascinating way. The footage was shot by the activists themselves. We see them developing their ideas. We see them approaching officials in the pharmaceutical industry at the NIH for the first time. We see how they begin to their campaign to change those systems, and ultimately to join in full partnership with Nobel Prize winning scientists to identify and develop the drug compounds that ultimately brought about this idea that HIV and HIV infection was survivable and could be survived as a kind of chronic condition. But that didn't happen until 1996. And by that time, and you see it in the film, many of the people had died. The epidemic that first impacted 41 by that time had millions of victims who had already died of the disease. And so it's a story about a triumph, but a bittersweet one.
Right. The desperation in the documentary is just overwhelming for me. One of the things that I really remember is listening to the narration about how AIDS patients would just take any kind of drug that they could find and hope that it would work and hope that they wouldn't suffer serious side effects.
They were willing, as part of their activism, which was born from their really fierce will to live, to use their bodies as laboratories for experimentation. And they created, scientific experiments that used scientific principle to try to produce information. They weren't just taking pills to see what happened. They were trying to create a body of information, even if it didn't save them, that might allow others to live. And there's a kind of a selflessness to their self-interested campaigns that was really fascinating. These are heroes. These are people who left a transformed healthcare world. The way drugs are researched today was a creation of theirs. They invented it. The way the NIH is structured today was structured by them. They structured it. They penned the new structure. They analyzed what was going wrong with our National Institutes of Health and fixed it and got Congress to impose it upon the NIH. The way that that patients are brought into drug trials today was something that they conceived of initially. And even the way we, as just ordinary consumers of healthcare, interact with our doctors is something that was revolutionized through the crucible of this terrible pandemic.
And what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, before AIDS, going back to 1981 and before, there was a very kind of hierarchical relationship that you would have with your doctor. You went to consult the oracle, and the oracle would tell you, you know, would issue pronouncements. And that no longer worked. I'm not saying it worked before. It was just the way it was done. But once AIDS came about, and it struck a population of people who were capable of and willing to inform themselves in really key aspects of what was happening in their bodies, the patient often knew more than the doctor. And that really confounded this relationship as it had initially existed and created a lot of conflict among many doctors and within the medical establishment itself. But, you know, since then, it's now taught in medical school that patients have to be full partners in their own healthcare, or you're really not going to be practicing medicine at its highest level. And that was because of the challenge that people with AIDS brought to their doctors and the openness that doctors in the early days of AIDS practice showed to creating this new partnership.
And this documentary is actually very personal for you. Your boyfriend of many years was taken by the virus, and you, of course, were a journalist following this entire epidemic. You know, what was that like during that time for you?
Well, you know, I think anybody who was in the community most vulnerable to the epidemic in the first years, and that was, you know, the gay community, the IV drug using community, the community of hemophiliacs, which was first hit so hard in the early days. We watched a really, really dark period in American history. We watched, you know, a political malfeasance. We watched as our friends got sick and died, and we were sure we would get sick and die. You know, we were sure that nobody would survive this, and that almost nobody would care. And you know, not even our family members. I mean, that's the awful truth about the early days of the epidemic, is that once diagnosed, people with HIV were were ostracized, were sent away from, you know, their families. You saw people dying in hospitals with, you know, where their siblings wouldn't come to visit, and their parents had written them off. It was really hideous. It was medieval. It was like, you know, a story out of old Calcutta, and we saw hospitals fill up to the point of overflowing, and we saw people just not caring about it. It was a phenomenal kind of disconnect. And in fact, that's why I became a journalist. You know, I had graduated from Kalamazoo. I was studying philosophy for my PhD. And then I saw what was happening in my community. And so I started asking questions. You know, when you see something like that happen, you feel called upon to act, or at least you should feel called upon to act. And so I began what turned into a journalism career in my campaign to try to find answers for us in the community that were otherwise obscured to us because no mainstream media sources were covering it. And then ultimately, you know, the disease got closer and closer and closer to me. I through some miracle, remained HIV negative all these years, but not the people close to me. And as you point out, my lover, Doug Gould, who was also from Kalamazoo College, was sick. And we tried, you know, pretty remarkably to try to keep him alive. And we weren't able to, and he died in 1992, which was one of the real terrible years of the plague in America. And I've dedicated the film to him. So in a way, working on this project all these years later allowed me to build kind of a bridge back to my own past and helped to for me to find some sort of closure in that history.
And I remember reading an article where you did another interview talking about you know, how you went from Kalamazoo, and they called it a non-gay friendly city. You know, talk about what the atmosphere was like in Kalamazoo at that time.
It was for a gay person, it was not a safe place. The college campus was a place where you would be physically endangered if you were known to be gay. We started in my senior year what is still a meeting regularly as the gay, lesbian, queer student group. And we had the first meetings, but we had to meet off campus. We announced them in the paper, in the campus paper, and we got threats of violence, you know, like wicked kind of criminal plans were being hatched to try to keep us from even meeting to get to know one another. So we met in secret locations. We met in rooms with no windows. It was a different time than it is today. And I was physically assaulted on numerous occasions, both in the city and on the campus.
Wow.
For being outspoken about these issues. So it's not a place of happy memories, but I do know that that has all changed. And that Kalamazoo is now one of the cities, you know, in the world where this incredible cultural transformation and integration has taken place in a way that has been, you know, thoroughgoing and pretty amazing. So I can't wait to go back and see.
Well, yeah, hopefully we can maybe prove ourselves a little bit better.
Well, you know, there's an organization based in Kalamazoo called the Arcus Foundation. Arcus Foundation was founded by a Kalamazoo College graduate, and he was able to bring a lot of his personal wealth to creating an organization whose major goal is to transform, is to integrate, you know, gay people into ordinary life. And it was based in Kalamazoo, but it's a global organization with global impact. And the track record there in town has been just amazing, from you know, a bricks and mortar development to kind of cultural development to creating not just a safe place, but a kind of a cutting edge place that shows that that people can live together in harmony, and that gay people can come out without, you know, and join a community rather than worrying about some physical violence.
And How to Survive a Plague is actually going to be made into an ABC miniseries.
It is.
What will we be able to see there?
Well, it's we're still talking about what that's going to look like, of course. And these projects take a while. We've just begun working on it. It's going to be many more hours than the documentary, and we think of it as a kind of a well, let me go back a little bit. You know, ABC was the network that brought us a real historically groundbreaking miniseries in the 70s called Roots. And Roots told the story for the very first time of how it was that African Americans, who now by the 70s were, you know, were fully engaged in our kind of civic life, how they got there, where they came from, what that journey was like before the current era. And we want to do the same thing through How to Survive a Plague, to tell the story about how within the crucible of the plague in the 80s and the 90s, and through the smoke and the ashes of that awful time, was built this remarkable movement, this grassroots social justice movement around gay and lesbian freedoms. So that's what we're doing. We're going to, you know, tell the bigger story that arose from the activity and actions that you see in the documentary.
And you also are working on a history of the AIDS epidemic. When is that going to come out?
I am. I think, you know, these things are all floating targets, but I think the book will come out at either the end of 2014 or the beginning of 2015. And it covers a lot of the same period. You know, I've decided that it was time to go back and really attack this history and try to make sense of it. And try to wrap it up in ways that would allow future generations to know what happened. And I think each of the projects, the documentary, the history book, and the miniseries are approaching the history, different parts of that history, and trying to mine different messages from them.
And I think that's about all that I had. Is there anything that you just wanted to say about the documentary or the miniseries or the book?
No, I think I've done.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.